Once a month, we visit with a researcher from the University of Oregon about some of the discoveries being made or at least sought at the UFO. We call the monthly visit Curious, Research Meets Radio. This month, we go small and talk about tiny creatures like ants that can deliver big, painful bites and stings to humans and other larger creatures. Do they carry knives or something? Not quite, but you're on the right track. Metal does play a part in the pinchy, bitey parts of small animals. The presence of zinc and manganese helps, as explained in recent research published by our guest and a big team of researchers. Our guest is Robert Schofield, research associate professor at the University of Oregon, focused on gravitational waves, which is not this, and structural biophysics, which this is. Dr. Schofield, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you.
And where did this research even start?
Well, this research started many, many years ago for me when I was getting my PhD. I was one of several graduate students with my advisor, Harlan Lefevre, who were working on developing a new kind of microscope, a microprobe that was similar to an electron microscope but used protons instead of electrons. And I wanted to test it out. And I had always been interested in biology, never could decide whether I wanted to be a biologist or a physicist. So the thing that interested me most just happened to be crossing the lab floor, and that was a little ant. And I grabbed it and put it in our new microscope, and the first thing I noticed was that it had these little zinc teeth. And not pure zinc, or people would have noticed if they were shiny metallic zinc, but a lot of zinc in the ants, reaching up to about 10% of the weight of their teeth, the little teeth on the edges of their mandibles, and that immediately struck me, and in some sense, my entire career has followed from that first observation. I looked in the literature to see if anybody else had noticed, and some people had noticed in ants and certain marine worms. And our new microprobe was very good at looking for these materials, and we could measure their concentration with it. So I ended up looking at all sorts of organisms and finding similar metals, zinc and manganese in scorpions, in spiders, in centipedes, and all sorts of other organisms. The question has been, of course, what is it doing there?
Well, and that's a great question. So here's some terms we'll need to get familiar with. Biomineralized is a good starter set.
Right. So one might expect little teeth to be different from the rest of the body, just as ours are, and we make a material that's biomineralized, meaning that a biologically grown mineral. And if you look close at our teeth, you find, or our bones, or that of many other vertebrates, you will see that they're little chunks of a mineral, a calcium mineral in this case. But other organisms use different minerals. So, for instance, a chitin, a mollusk that you would find in tide pools, as well as a number of other mollusks, use an iron mineral, more like rust, or actually some of them use magnetite. And what they're doing is trying to make a hard hard tooth or other tool so that they can puncture or cut with them. But it turns out that most small creatures don't use biomineralization like we do. Instead, they use this these other materials that we call heavy element biomaterials. And this paper that we've most recently published suggests why they would be more likely to use that, for instance, than biomineralization. And basically, we think the idea is that this material is very homogeneous, very smooth, and the zinc atoms are actually attached one by one directly to the protein. And so there's not these little chunks of mineral in it, and we think that that allows them to be much sharper than what you could make with biomineralization that has chunks of material in it. It's kind of like you can't make that sharp of a knife out of glass beads if you can't subdivide or polish those beads. You know, the knife can only be as sharp as the size of the bead. Well, that's also the case in biomineralization. The knife can only be as sharp as the size of the chunks of minerals. But this material, there are no chunks of minerals. It's directly, the zinc atoms are directly attached to the proteins.
This is Curious, our Research Meets Radio segment on the Jefferson Exchange with physicist Robert Schofield from the University of Oregon. We're talking about heavy element biomaterials, basically metallic things that are appearing on the teeth and claws and other sharp, bitey, pinchy parts of creatures, very small ones, that yield a very large benefit to them and a lot of pain to us if we encounter them. You can join our conversation on the exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Robert, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Schofield, yeah.
Schofield, okay. So this is not a conscious process. We don't have ants mining for hard rocks and souping up their mandibles, right?
No, not at all. You use zinc in certain proteins that affect expression of your genes, zinc-fingered proteins, and in lots of other places. So you have a lot of zinc or and so does an ant in their body already, and they're very good at pulling it out of their food. So it's not that big of a deal, I don't think, for them to use a fraction of it, and it's only a minor fraction that's incorporated into their mandibles. But I wanted to point out why they would want a material that can be sharper than your teeth can be, than the sharpest teeth, much, much sharper than the sharpest teeth we know of that are made of biominerals. And that's simply because their muscles are so small, and yet they're cutting things that huge animals with vastly stronger muscles cut. For instance, a wolf and a tick both have to puncture the same elk skin, and a wolf has a hard time at it, and you would have a hard time biting through skin, and yet a little ant or a scorpion can just, with their tiny muscles, puncture you right away. And of course, the trick is that their tools are very sharp compared to what you could make with a biomineral. And so they're able to focus their tiny, tiny forces onto a tiny patch of your skin and get the same pressure that the wolf would get. And because of that sharpness, they're able to cut our tough skin.
So where we have these big blocky kinds of teeth, they have these really, really pointy kinds of body parts that truly are metallic. They are like knife blades in a sense.
Yes, though they're not, I wouldn't call them metallic because the atoms, the metal atoms, the zinc or the manganese, mm-hmm. are bound individually to the protein. So okay. rather than to each other, they're bound in the protein individually.
So do you have a basis of comparison for either the sharpness or the hardness? I mean, let's start with the hardness. I mean, is it as hard as something else found in nature or something that you find on humans?
So they're actually about as hard as aluminum, that a material that we would all be familiar with. So their teeth are, or the stings of scorpions and the claws of all sorts of things like spiders. So it's not just mouth parts, but like claws, as you've been pointing out, and stings, are about as hard as aluminum, and roughly as hard as certain biomineralized teeth, although enamel teeth can be quite a bit harder. So not quite as hard as the hardest biomineralized teeth, mm-hmm. but about like aluminum.
Okay, so that takes care of the hardness. What about the sharpness? I mean, do these come to like, you know, single molecule points or something?
Not single molecules, but for instance, a leafcutter ant, when it starts off, it has a radius of the radius of the blade is about 50 nanometers, so that would be about 500 atoms in radius. So actually, very sharp, especially compared to the sharpest of a claim of the sharpest biomineralized teeth, which was about 2 microns. Rather than 50 nanometers, so hundreds of times sharper than even the sharpest biomineral tooth.
We are talking again with Robert Schofield, a physicist at the University of Oregon, who ended up wandering into biology because of the development of this microscope that actually uses protons and not electrons, the microprobe, and tested it out on ants, spiders, scorpions, nereid worms, and realized that these critters have things like zinc and manganese that that really help keep their bitey, pinchy, stingy parts sharp and hard. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this in this month's edition of Curious. Research Meets Radio, our joint project with the University of Oregon, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Bill in Sutherland is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. I have a question. I guess it kind of relates to what you're talking about. What is the composition of venomous snake fangs?
Okay, yeah. Are those more like teeth or more like these insect parts, Robert?
They're more like teeth. So they would have biominerals in them as well as proteins.
Okay, so let's come back into the little guys. And did I have that list complete? Ant, spider, scorpion, and nereid worm were the foci of the research?
Those were our model organisms, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're certainly not everything that uses them, but those are the ones we studied, yeah.
All right, so I can imagine it. You know, you're not just looking at it, but you want to get some idea of you know, sharpness, puncturability, things like that. I mean, talk about the tools that you had to develop for this research.
Yeah, that's right. For a long time, people were speculating about what their properties might be, how well they might resist abrasion, how well they might resist fracture, all those sorts of properties that you care about in a material. But, of course, the machines to test for that, the standard machines that test materials, test big samples and nothing as small as an ant tooth. So we had to develop little machines to be able to test material samples that were small as the tooth of an ant. And we made machines that tested the resistance to fracture and resistance to impact and resistance to abrasion, as well as new techniques to using existing machines to measure other mechanical properties like damping.
Mm-hmm. So, and some of the images that come along with the research, they're fascinating to me anyway. And I included Figure 1 from your research from Nature on our website because it's really interesting here. You're looking at full color pictures of the animal body parts like scorpion stings and marine worm mouth parts and ant mandibles. But so the color pictures speak for themselves. What are we looking at in these black and white images that look like X-rays?
So in some ways those are similar. In the black and white image, those are the actual images from that microscope that I first found in that first ant that I looked at, and What's going on is the beam of protons goes through the material, and it pulls electrons off of the atoms, and as they return, they emit X-rays that are characteristic of the elements inside are inside. So there are X-rays that are emitted by zinc atoms that tell you right off that's a zinc atom. So we're collecting those X-rays, and where we get those X-rays from in those pictures, we draw white pixels, whiter pixels, the more X-rays there are. So, that's how those images are made. They basically show the origin of zinc or manganese X-rays. In addition, there's something that really does look an X-ray image, and that's made by just the protons passing through the material. If they slow down a lot, we draw a whiter pixel, and so you can basically see the thickness, because the thicker it is, the more the proton slows down. And so we essentially get an image. You're basically looking through that fang and marginal teeth in those proton images.
Yeah, the images are available at our website too. We included them on our page at jeffexchange.org. So some really fascinating stuff with really, really, I mean, because you put the scale there, you have a, like half a millimeter scale there, and show just how much smaller these things are. So these are really pointy. I mean, and there are human, not on human bodies, but the fact that we have developed tools that have very hard edges on them, so those edges will stay sharp and not get abraded easily. But essentially, we have been mimicking nature in doing so.
Yes, of course, to some degree, a long time ago when we started out, and perhaps also in the future. So there are some properties about this that we're going on and to investigate that include maybe self-healing, some things that might be useful for materials that people make.
Mm-hmm. So the advantage again to the animal is that you walk around with this sharp thing that can puncture something. You don't have to apply a whole lot of muscle power.
Right, and it means you can have smaller muscles. You can be a smaller animal, so you can become smaller, say, or it opens up a new all sorts of new food sources, because you can now cut and puncture things that you wouldn't have been able to without these materials. And of course, when they're relying on the sharpness for in order to get food, if they break or if they become dull or worn, that can be fatal. That's way worse than for us. We can still brute force our way through a steak, but they can't, because they don't have the muscles to do it. One interesting thing we've found is that when leafcutter ants, when their mandibles lose their sharpness, they no longer cut. But because they're eusocial, they can continue to help the colony by carrying the leaves that other ants have cut.
Interesting. So a division of labor. Wow, that's amazing. So we talked about the fact that you had the microprobe done. And by the way, this is like the Batman origin story, you have to admit. It's like, what flew through the window? A bat. No, in this case, it was an ant crawled across the floor. But you went a little...
I hadn't thought of that, but that's good.
So but you chose some other animals from further afield than Eugene, didn't you?
Then what's that?
In other words, some of the animals you looked at were not just things that you could find around Eugene, right?
Well, a lot of them were. Mm-hmm. There's a surprising amount of things you can find around Eugene or the coast. So you know, those marine worms we dig up mm-hmm. Down at OIMB, the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology, out in the sand flats. You don't. A lot of people don't know, and they're walking out there going clamming. There are worms under them that can reach up to 3 feet long and and can bite them.
Yikes. They don't very often, though, it sounds like.
No, not at all.
So did you choose animals that were noteworthy for the pain induced by their bites and stings?
No, not really. For this paper, it was just a selection of ones that we could get. We needed a lot of them. It took a long time and a lot of animals. And you notice there were a lot of students involved in that, and that we could get locally. So all of those, or that we had in a lab. We have a bunch of leafcutter ant colonies in the lab. And the marine worms we got down at OIMB, and the scorpions we had, we purchased those, but they were sent to us from Arizona. Mm-hmm. And the spiders we collected in the bushes around campus.
Oh, wow. So talk about the development of the microprobe. We're down to our last minute here, but, I mean, has that gone far and wide? Is it being manufactured elsewhere now or something?
No, not really. It certainly played a role for few years, but now there's kind of more common techniques that can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, but boy, you sure got up nice and tight on some of these creatures here: ants, spiders, scorpions, nereid worms. All have these tools that are enhanced by the presence of metallic minerals in them, as discovered by the team at the University of Oregon, led by Robert Schofield, the physicist. And do you ever get to work on gravitational waves anymore?
All the time. Okay. I spend half my time in looking up and half my time looking down.
Okay, looking down at structural biophysics. Thanks for sharing this with us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're very welcome.
Curious Research Meets Radio was a joint project with the University of Oregon and the Jefferson Exchange, and we'll have somebody different next month.